You are listening to The Game Plan on the official Raiders podcast network. Here's your host, JT the Brick.
Welcome to the Game Plan Podcast on the Oakland Raiders Podcasting Network. I'm your host, JT, as we get you set for the Battle of the Bay, Thursday night football prime time, as the Oakland Raiders go to Levi's Stadium to take on the San Francisco 49ers. The Niners come into the game 1-7, coming off a devastating loss to the Arizona Cardinals. Second time they lost to the Cardinals already this year. And the Raiders coming off a home loss to the Indianapolis Colts. Raiders are 1-6 against the Niners, 1-7. I don't think anybody expected the records for both of these teams heading into this game on Thursday night. Obviously, a very quick week turnaround for the podcast, coming off being there Sunday in Oakland for the Colts game and now having to get you ready for this game on Thursday night. If anything changes in regards to the trade deadline, if there's any news, keep it to Raiders.com or on Twitter or on Facebook. Follow the Raiders for all your up-to-date information. Just quickly looking back at the game against the Indianapolis Colts, I thought the Raiders had a bounce back performance after their trip to London and the bye week in a game where the Raiders had the lead 28-21 entering the fourth quarter. Another example with the Raiders going toe-to-toe with an opponent into the second half, let alone the fourth quarter, but running out of gas and losing the game. I thought it was a big game for Derek Carr. Statistically, he had an outstanding performance in that game. It was a bounce-back game for Derek. It looked like the offense was a little bit more open in this game. He was able to connect with Seth Roberts.
First down and 5 now. Carr goes up underneath center. Let's see if John wants to pound the ball. He does not. Wants to throw. Got a receiver open. Touchdown, Raiders! Seth Roberts.
That was a big deal because Seth was open, I think, as much as any player I've seen this year, and Derek hit him in stride. Really big moment in that game for Derek to get the offense going. And into the second half, Derek remained someone who was going to move outside the pocket, make plays, and go to one of his newer targets.
Rashard is alongside Carr. They're going to slip him out. Carr looking the other way. Now he steps up. Now he fires end zone. Touchdown! Brandon LaFell's first touchdown as an Oakland Raider.
That was a big deal to get him going, because obviously with Amari Cooper being gone, we were wondering who was going to step up. Seth was able to do it. LaFell was able to do it. Cook had a touchdown in the game, but the Raiders end up losing that game 42-28. A couple of takeaways from that game. There was one turnover. It was the Doug Martin fumble. It was a big deal. It was a big fumble. John Gruden owned it along with Martin, and they've talked about that. Doug ran hard. He had 72 yards on this game, 29 yards his longest run, but the fumble was really costly late in the game. And for the Indianapolis Colts, Andrew Luck was 22-31 for 239 yards, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions, and he wasn't touched really in the entire game. And that has to change, because Andrew Luck is the type of guy you got to get to him. If you don't get to him, he's going to tear you up. And three different tight ends had touchdowns for the Indianapolis Colts, a Colts team that ran it for 222 yards and controlled the time of possession. 36 minutes and 30 seconds to the Raiders, 23 minutes and 30 seconds. The Colts had 71 plays to the Raiders' 47. The Raiders' linebackers and safeties could not cover Indy's tight ends. That's been a problem that we've seen all year long for Paul Gunther's defense. They know it. I thought they should have got more physical with Doyle in the second half of the game. He was running free off the line of scrimmage, and he was able to make big plays down the stretch. That Raider defense was on the field for most of the game, and I think they wore out late in that game, and it cost them there. But they got to do a better job on this defense. And it's been what we've been talking about, how to get better players as Rodgers Cromartie retires this week, as other players are banged up, as players are injured, and they're looking to build this roster in the future with draft picks on defense and future free agents. That was a good spot for the Raiders to win a game at home. The Colts came through 42-28. After the game, John Gruden talked about Indy's ability to impose their will. They were physical and they were dominant late in the game.
They imposed their will today. You know, they physically did a great job with not only their schemes and their blocking combinations. They did a great job. You know, we're playing without a couple veterans. We hope to get Eddie Vanderdoes and Cedric Ellis back soon, but I'll make no excuses. It wasn't good enough today.
what if Doug Martin didn't fumble? What if Carr was able to go back and forth with Andrew Luck? He did for most of the game until the fourth quarter where Indy scored three times and took over the game. You could look at their physicality. You could look at their preparation and their game plan. And John Gruden just mentioned that. For Derek Carr and John Gruden, I thought that was an important step for them to go to the next level with that relationship with the coach and the quarterback.
I've said I think he's a great player. You know, I thought our rookie tackles played well today. Our backup left guard, Feliciano, did great. Thought Doug Martin stepped up other than the fumble late in the game. It's not all Derek Carr, but I'll again say I think he's the strength of this team, and I'm excited about him.
So the Raiders are still looking for their second win. The Niners are looking for their second win. Again, the Niners really struggled in that game. But they had a 15-3 lead against the Arizona Cardinals. Two fourth-quarter touchdowns for Josh Rosen in that game. Big win for Arizona, someone the Raiders will see out in the desert in the valley of Arizona coming up here in a few short weeks. So we look back, now we look ahead, and we begin the Game Plan podcast with one of the greatest Raiders of all time. Hall of Fame wide receiver Tim Brown joins us. And Tim, you've had about a week to now digest the Amari Cooper trade. What are your thoughts?
You always hate to see something not work out the way, you know, you plan to, especially when, you know, he's a first-round pick, guy that's so talented. I'm hoping for Amari's sake that this is a wake-up call for him, that, when you have that kind of talent, you know, having 22 catches at this point of the season, you know, isn't acceptable. This kid, I thought, when he came out, was one of the best receivers to hit the market in years. And I'm not saying he's not that guy now. I just think that sometimes we need a wake-up call. And I think for him, this could be that. So he could come down here to Dallas and play incredibly well for the next 10 years. And I think for the Raiders, you know, I mean, the hope is, okay, we got a first-round pick for him, so let's go see if we can pick another guy that, can get it done for us.
You know, Tim, you were really honest with me in the past about your relationship with Amari. There really wasn't a big relationship there because Amari was a quiet guy. He kept to himself overall. I talked about that with Freddie Biletnikoff, Cliff Branch overall. Do you think now at 24 years old, a new change of pace, maybe he just opens up a little bit more because that's what the Raiders were hoping for in Oakland?
Yeah, you know, I think, this is partly the Raiders' fault also. I think, they need to have a little bit better pathway for former players to talk to young players. And, I think down here in Dallas, him and Mike Irvin will probably be the best of friends because Michael is always around the facility. He's always, around Jerry Jones and the group. So I'm being a little facetious about saying they're going to be best friends, but I'm just saying there'll probably be more communication with the older players down here than with the Raiders. This is a wake up call for everybody. I think you don't fail on a guy like Amari, and everybody don't take responsibility for it. You know, this is not just on Amari. This is certainly on the Raiders organization also.
Derek Carr had a pretty good game against the Colts, even though they lost. Three touchdown passes, 21 of 29. Timmy, from watching Derek on TV when you're at games, knowing him the way you do over the years, really going through a rough stretch here. He started off his career 0-10, going through another one of those streaks now. How do you think he's handling it, especially all the pressure from the media and everybody really leaning hard on him?
Yeah, well, really, you can't ever worry about what the media said. It's all about what the guys in the locker room know about you, not think about you, but what they know about you. So, it's always pretty interesting to hear what the media is saying, but most of the time they have it just a little bit wrong, if not a lot wrong. So, and I think in this situation, you hear all the guys coming out and some of the guys coming out saying some incredible things about Derek's leadership and how they feel about him. And I think you have to take them for their word. But I don't think, he needs to be worried about this. I think what you have to understand and what you have to see, the one thing about Gruden, when he got to the Raiders back in the day, what we saw week in, week out was how we had a chance to win the football game. Whereas before he got there, we didn't see that on Monday when we were watching film. We didn't see how we had a chance to win the football game. So the enthusiasm that he generated was when you watch the game film and you see, wow, if I make that block, Charlie Garner runs for another 15 yards, and that sets us up for a field goal that maybe we can, you know what I mean? When you see things like that happen week in and week out, then you have to be excited. And I think that's where Derek Carr has to be. He has to be able to look and say, if I would have made that throw, or if we'd have made that run, if we would have stopped him on defense. I mean, there are going to be one or two plays that are going to be so critical that you're going to understand, man, if we can just do this a little better, we got a chance to win these football games. And that's the excitement that Gruden is going to bring, because his game plan is always going to be so solid. You're going to have a chance. You just got to go out there and perform.
Tim Brown's our guest. I'm thrilled you said that about Charlie Garner. I talked to Freddie about it this past weekend, and he said Garner was that perfect type of player with you and Jerry and the offense and how loaded that offensive line was with Gannon. Charlie was the type of guy who can run hard but catch the ball out of the backfield, and he understood his role in the offense. Tim, back to your years with John Gruden. How difficult was it to learn his offense, his verbiage, and get comfortable with it?
You know, it's a lot. It's a lot. And guess what? You'll never really get it, because he has so much in that offense. The more you grasp, the more he's going to put on you. I mean, we got to the point where it took 2 minutes to call a play, it felt like, you know what I mean? Because there was a lot of verbiage. And the best thing that we came up with was a system, a hand signal system, or a one-word signal system where, you know, we could just say out a word and everybody knew what it was. So, you're never going to get on top of this offense 100%, you know, but I think once you master the 10, 20, 30, 40, 50% of it, then you really get into the real specialized parts of this offense that can really make any defense. You know, I can remember going up to Pittsburgh, and with a game plan of whatever they did, we were going to do the opposite. And if they lined up in a certain defense, we were going to run the ball no matter what. If they ran up in another defense, we were going to throw the ball. One time they lined up in the same defense 8 times. Guess what? We threw the same little flare pass to me 4, 5, 6 times in a row. Until they, what did they do? They came out the defense because we dictated what they had to do. So there's a lot of little nuances with this offense, man, that I would hope Raider Nation and everybody would just chill out and understand that this thing is going to turn around. And when it does, it's going to be great for everybody involved.
Tim, finally, take me back to October 8th, 2000. You have the receiving yards record in this rivalry with the Niners, 172 yards, 2 touchdowns. You had 2 touchdowns also in another game in this series. The Battle of the Bay, when I met you, meant a lot to the fans, the 49er Empire, the Raider Nation. This could be the last time it's played in the Bay Area.
Yeah, and that's really unfortunate. I'm sure the NFL is going to try their best to keep this game going in some kind of way. I can see them doing it in a neutral stadium, which would be even awesome, you know, somewhere in California. But this is a game that means a lot, man, no doubt about it, you know, because no matter what happens, you can always say we won the last one, or we're the Bay champions or whatever. So you may not think that's a lot, but when you walk around town in Oakland and San Francisco, you know, I used to go to Benihana's every Friday night in San Francisco. And it felt good when I beat the 49ers. I can go over there with my head up high, you know. So this is a little big thing that would certainly, in the scheme of things with the Raiders right now, would mean a lot to them.
Last one, Tim. The Niners are 1-7. The Raiders are 1-6. So your message is this game does mean something. Even though people are talking about draft picks and free agency and what's going to happen next, go out and win this game in the Battle of the Bay. Win the rivalry game.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, win this game, man. You know, obviously for your season, it's going to mean something, you know, because I was on a few bad Raider teams, but never did I feel like we were ever trying to tank it to get a draft pick. And I don't think that's who Gruden is all about. You know, he's got to keep building this offense and keep building this defense to the point where these guys know that they have the ability to win football games. So that being said, you know, I think this is a hugely important game for the Raiders in an effort to get back to where they want to get back to.
Thank you, Tim. I always appreciate your time. Have a great day.
Hey, thank you, Bill. Appreciate you, JT.
Always great to get Tim Brown on every year on the Game Plan podcast. I talk to him on the radio, and he wants the Raiders to turn this around sooner than later. Love the emotion of Tim in that interview. Now we welcome in one of the, if not the best 49er insider out there. Matt Maiocco joins us from NBC Sports Bay Area. And Matt, let's jump right in here. The Battle of the Bay, the rivalry is still a big deal, is it not, to the Bay Area?
It should be. But you know what? I think when Tim Brown was playing, and I just feel like there was more of a rivalry back in the day. You know, I just don't hear players talking about, you know, the Raiders as being a big rivalry. And I'm not sure exactly why that is. I don't know if, you know, I would imagine the 49ers being in Santa Clara, you know, the Raiders being in Alameda, that maybe, you know, the players don't really know each other all that well. I don't think they necessarily follow the scores of the other team. I think it's still a big game for the fan base. You know, the fan base will be – the fan bases, I should say. You know, they'll be riled up. It won't be – in their minds, it won't be 2 1-win teams playing. It'll be, you know, for bragging rights, and just hopefully on a Thursday night, you know, the people in the stands conduct themselves in a nice manner.
The Jimmy Garoppolo injury, and everyone who saw how great he played at the end of last year and the expectations coming into this year, what did you see in the few games that he played before he got injured that leads you to believe he'll come back as better as ever, especially under this coaching staff?
Yeah, I mean, he's a talented guy. There's no question about it. The interesting thing, though, is that he's now been in the league for 5 years, and the backup quarterback, C.J. Beathard, has thrown, you know, attempted more passes in his career than Jimmy Garoppolo has. But the thing about Garoppolo is, like, there's no gimmicks. You know, it's not like he was out there at the end of the season last year and the 49ers went on a 5-game winning streak. It's not like, you know, teams weren't prepared for him. You know, they prepare for Kyle Shanahan's offense, and Garoppolo runs it very well. But I think even more than what he brings to the team on the field, he's a leader, and he stepped in last year in the middle of the season and the locker room really gravitated toward him, and he gave them hope. And, you know, this was a team that lost its first 9 games last season and was 1-10 when Garoppolo took over. And when he came in, I mean, the team just lit up. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it was because he played very well, but also a lot of it was just the demeanor. And so I think you saw an opposite effect this year. Season starts. You know, they knew the first 4 games were going to be pretty rough, and if you can get through those 2-2, you're feeling pretty good about the direction of the team. And they lost in Kansas City, but more important, they lost Garoppolo, torn ACL late in that game. And from that moment on, you could just see the opposite effect, where the team just became absolutely deflated. And I think everyone throughout the organization felt like, okay, well, 2018 is over. Let's just try to develop the rest of the roster and win a few games here and there, but to get ready for 2019.
Matt Maiocco's our guest, and that's really what I wanted to talk to you about. Instead of breaking down play-by-play of the loss to the Cardinals or the Raiders losing to the Colts this past Sunday, big picture on the similarities between Kyle Shanahan and John Gruden. John Gruden comes back. He's the biggest free agent coach that Mark Davis could dream of getting, and now he's sitting on 1 win and trading players and making moves here because he's looking at the roster and he knows he can't win at a high level with it. Not the case with the Niners, who are trying to build one step at a time but have a devastating injury to the quarterback. Can you compare what you're seeing with both of these coaches on both different sides of the Bay and what they're going to be dealing with the rest of the season?
Well, I'll compare Kyle Shanahan last year to John Gruden this year.
Okay.
And it's pretty similar. You know, the only difference is, well, not, I don't know that there have been a whole lot of differences. And John Gruden is trying to get the roster the way he wants it. And if that means, you know, trading away Khalil Mack, if that means trading away Amari Cooper for draft picks that you believe can help you down the road to get the kinds of players you want in, you know, that's what he's going to do. Last year with Kyle Shanahan, if it meant trading Ahmad Brooks, if it meant, you know, cutting Navarro Bowman, that's what he's going to do to get the roster in a position where he wants it for the future. So, you know, it's pretty clear Shanahan last year and Gruden this year didn't think that they were, you know, had teams that were ready for the playoffs. I don't think there was any misconception about that. You know, I don't think the Raiders were, you know, gearing up thinking they're going to go to the Super Bowl, but both of these guys have a lot of security. You know, for Kyle Shanahan, a first-time head coach, this is a 6-year contract, which is kind of unheard of. And then, of course, what was really unheard of was John Gruden with a 10-year contract. So those guys know that there's leeway. Yeah, the fan base might be upset when Kyle Shanahan loses 9 straight games to open his career. Yeah, the Raiders fan base might be upset when a couple notable players leave and the Raiders aren't where anybody wants them to be. But the big picture is get the roster squared away early so that you can reap the benefits of it later by having guys on your roster that you believe fit for the long haul. So from that sense, I think both the 49ers and the Raiders have taken the approach of almost, you know, take a step back or a couple steps back to be better in the long haul.
Wrapping it up with Matt Maiocco. He does an amazing job covering the 49ers and the NFL. And I wanted to touch on your position as a Hall of Fame voter. I know you've been asked a bunch about Tom Flores recently, too. Cliff Branch, you know how the Raider Nation cares about that. The Niners have some of the greatest players to ever play this game in the Hall of Fame. Can you give us your opinion, Matt, on what it would take or what needs to happen for Tom Flores? What is the support around the hall with older, younger coaches, with members of the hall already? Because Raider fans are really wondering what more needs to happen from their perspective as a fan base to help out Coach Flores.
Well, at this point, you know, the 48 voters have already turned in their ballots that cuts it from all the first line of nominees to 25 semifinalists. And those 25 semifinalists will be announced at some point in November. I don't believe Tom Flores has ever made the 25, let alone the 15. And the 15 is when you get into the room and you start discussing those 15 guys. Up until that point, every voter is kind of on their own and can kind of decide on their own, you know, who their top 15 or their top 25 are going to be. So there's not an opportunity for Frank Cooney, who represents the Raiders vote, to get up and make a statement, make an argument for a candidate. Here's what I would like to see happen is that right now you have your modern era finalists. And then you also have a contributor category, and you have a seniors category. I would like to see the coaches be put into the contributor category. In my mind, if it comes down to a coach or a player, you know, I'm going to lean more toward the player than the coach. Now, obviously, a guy like, you know, Bill Belichick, whenever he comes up, is probably going to be pretty easy to pick. But I would like to see coaches go into that contributor category. And then that way, it's a smaller group of a subcommittee of voters who decide who's going to be the candidate. If Tom Flores has any chance, I just don't see it being through the regular vote. I think he's going to have to come through one of the committees where, you know, 4, 5, 6 men and women get together and talk about the pool of candidates who are out there, and then bring those to the committee for that vote the day before the Super Bowl. So I just don't see it happening anytime soon just because of what the history has been as far as him not advancing very far in this process.
Matt, last one. I thought you did a brilliant job covering the death of Dwight Clark. It's an emotional time within the organization of the 49ers, to the statue unveiling with Joe Montana and Dwight Clark to catch. Can you just leave us on one takeaway from knowing Dwight, following him and his courage at the end of his life, and then the reaction from Eddie DeBartolo and the entire organization, Jed York, and how they handled that?
Yeah, you know, it was he was the perfect guy for what the 49ers became. You know, he was the perfect guy to handle that moment. You know, the springboard for their dynasty of the 80s and playing well through the early part of the 90s was because of the catch. And he had this way, just his personality. He loved his place in 49ers history. He was all, I've never heard a word from anybody who said that he wasn't anything but accommodating. If you ever saw him out, his personality, the way he embodied the love of the fans and the love of being in that moment, kind of took it from, you know, the perfect play to the perfect individual for that play to occur with. So, you know, obviously I got to know him very well and spent a lot of time with him late in his life. And he just never changed, you know, never changed. There were times when, you know, he would be having really rough days as he was battling ALS, but, you know, you'd go talk to him and he would get on a roll and you could just see him get energized by talking and sharing great stories and nobody told a story better than Dwight. So, I think there was a little bit of insecurity in him for whatever reason that once he was gone, people were going to forget about him. But I think toward the end, he really saw and felt secure that he'll never be forgotten. Mm-hmm. And now there are statues up outside of Levi Stadium. It's a play that will endure forever from the 49er fan base and well around NFL history. And I think when he passed away, he was, he felt like no stone was left unturned and he accomplished everything he could. And I think he was ready, you know, when that time came.
Incredible conversation as always, Matt. I always appreciate your time. Continued success. Thanks for joining me.
All right, JT. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
You can always check out Matt's work on NBC Sports Bay Area. He does an excellent job with his reporting, also his podcast. I wanted to get a new insider up here who not only covers the 49ers, but the Raiders from The Athletic in the Bay Area. Dave Lombardi is our guest. And Dave, walk us through the fourth quarter of that Niner loss and how it played out.
Yeah, we've seen this movie before with the 49ers, and I think that game was really emblematic of what the problems for this team are and what they have to address as far as their bigger picture plan goes under Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch. First of all, they lost that game 18-15 by the same exact score they lost last year against Arizona, 18-15, same deal, blowing a lead with their defense late. And the reason that they blew that lead with their defense was because the offense under a quarterback who's, you know, quite frankly, isn't good enough right now with Jimmy Garoppolo on injured reserve, it is not doing enough to set the defense up for success late in games. So this is a team that I think just doesn't have enough playmakers at crucial positions. And on defense, that's the edge rusher spot. That's the secondary. I mean, those game-changing positions that have to make a play when push comes to shove, the 49ers just don't have that right now. So they're unable to close out a lot of these games. And we're seeing this repeat itself on an almost weekly basis. I mean, they got blown out by the Rams, but you saw it on Monday Night Football a couple weeks ago. They had a lead. They did some good things against Green Bay. They couldn't finish it off. Same thing on Sunday against the Cardinals. They're just lacking that final punch, and that's something that they're going to really have to address this offseason.
Yeah, I think you would agree, similar with the Raiders, too. And we were past Khalil Mack in the trade that started off the season, but the Raiders in time of possession in the first quarter Sunday against the Colts, their defense was gassed in the fourth quarter, and when someone needed to make a play, they have guys who can do it on offense, but they struggle on defense in games that they're trying to win late.
Yeah, and, you know, football works in conjunction. It's a beautiful sport because you really do need the full team to deliver. Obviously, a good quarterback really raises all the boats. It raises the water level there, right? And everything is better if you have a good QB. The 49ers right now are suffering with their backup quarterback. And as you saw with Jimmy Garoppolo last year, everything got better when he was in there. But right now, all those flaws are really exposed. And I think that both the 49ers and the Raiders, there's a reason these are 2-1-win teams, right? And I think it's a lot of the reasons are common between these two teams, and that's what makes this next Thursday's game all the more interesting for me, because you have a couple teams playing for pride, but you also have a couple really flawed teams have both found new ways to lose football games on a weekly basis. So something's going to have to give when they play.
David Lombardi is our guest from The Athletic. David, you wrote about Kendrick Bourne a couple of weeks ago and his story. If you could share that with our audience. He had 7 receptions for 71 yards. That's his career game. Tell us where he came from. What's his backstory?
Kendrick Bourne's interesting because he was an extremely prolific receiver in college, albeit at an FCS school up in Eastern Washington over near Spokane. But nobody really had ever heard of him coming out of college because his teammate was even more prolific than he was. And that was Cooper Kupp, who's with the Los Angeles Rams right now. So the Eastern Washington Eagles, they had these two guys plus Shaq Hill, a third receiver, that just lit it up for 4 years there. They play on that red field up there in Eastern Washington. If you think Boise State's blue field is crazy, That red field is something to see. You'll really think that your TV set's broken when you watch one of their games. And Bourne was just the number two guy, so he flew under the radar, was undrafted. 49ers picked him up, and they've been grooming him, trying to get him to take over that X wide receiver position that Pierre Garçon's currently the starter at. But with Garçon, he's not really in their full long-term plans. There have even been trade rumors regarding that this week, because he's going to be 32 years old, and obviously he was just the guy that Kyle Shanahan brought in to help shepherd the younger players, having been familiar with Shanahan before, into the system. So Bourne is a player with a lot of short area quickness, a lot of fluidity to his moves that the 49ers hope can take that spot, take the torch, and help them not have to use too much draft capital or too much money for a wide receiver acquisition, so they could focus that money elsewhere, since the roster is pretty deficient talent-wise at some of those other key spots. And that was Bourne's breakout game. 7 catches, I think somewhere near 80 yards against the Cardinals. And they're going to need more of that moving forward, not just for this season, but in terms of their bigger picture plan.
Wrapping up with David Lombardi from The Athletic, is Richard Sherman going to buy in still with a 1-7 team, 0-5 on the road? He wasn't happy at times in Seattle on a very good team. What's he been like to cover? What's he like in the locker room when he's away from the field? Is he completely buying in, even though the team's struggling?
Richard Sherman's great, and Richard Sherman's a guy I'm actually personally familiar with because we were in the same class together at Stanford. We both graduated in 2010, so it was awesome covering him as a student for 4 years, and I saw a lot of parallels between that and what he's going through right now. And the biggest one that we talked about this past week was that people don't realize this, but Richard Sherman's first year at Stanford, 2006, they won one game. So his first year in a new uniform in the Bay Area, he was on a 1-win team that really, really struggled. And then obviously they turned it around after Jim Harbaugh came in 2007. But he finds himself in a bit of a deja vu situation right now, returning to the Bay Area, putting on a red uniform again, and boom, he's on a 1-win team all of a sudden. And it's interesting because this is, in both situations, Richard Sherman kind of signed up for early struggles. When he committed to go to Stanford back in 2006, he knew that he was going to a struggling program and he wanted to help turn it around. And he's been, you know, completely transparent about this. He says that Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch were very honest with him when he signed with the 49ers back in March that this was going to be a long-term rebuild for the 49ers, and it was probably going to have some losing and a lot of growing pains at the start. Of course, nobody expected Jimmy Garoppolo to tear his ACL, so that's compounded the issues for the 49ers. But Sherman has said, I know that I'm here to be a teacher. I know I'm in the longer term plans, which means at least a couple of years with this team. And it's not about whether or not we have one win this year. It's about building for that 2019 and 2020 season. So he's remained, I think, very positive in spite of the losing with that attitude.
Last thing I wanted to ask you about this game. From my career in the radio, 20-plus years up there, the Battle of the Bay, knowing Niner fans and Raider fans, both fans right now are hurt for obvious reasons. I think this is a big game The records, I understand the records for a nationally televised game is nothing to be proud of, but John Gruden needs a win. Obviously, Kyle Shanahan needs a win. Carr had a bounce-back game in Oakland in a loss, and I just think it's important for the fan base. What do you think the atmosphere is going to be like at Levi on Thursday night with both these fan bases?
Well, this is the last Battle of the Bay, right? The next time that the Raiders and the 49ers face, there'll be Las Vegas against San Francisco. So it's obviously not going to have that Oakland versus San Francisco history. And there have been a lot of great moments, obviously, in that rivalry. So I expect the atmosphere to be good. And I think that that was going to be the case regardless of whether or not these teams have good records. I mean, that's what matters to these fans. This happens, what, once every 4 years? The last time, I don't think the Raiders had a win, right, when they faced the 49ers in 2014, or they only had one, but they got that win against a Jim Harbaugh team on the decline that year, and I remember how emotional that game was. So neither of those two teams went to the playoffs, and it still meant a lot. That was at the Coliseum. This is going to be the first time that the Raiders visit Levi Stadium, and I expect the atmosphere to be an intense one just because of that, because at the end of the day, football is a game of emotion. You have to have that emotion, have that fuel to be in a position to play this game, to be, to have a shot out there in such a violent sport that requires all that buy-in. And I think that the rivalry there is reason enough for that to happen for these players, and they'll fuel the crowd and the crowd will fuel them.
Thank you so much, David. I appreciate it. Great work. You're really thorough. I like the stories that you're telling out of this organization and what's happening with Bay Area football. Thanks a lot for the time.
All right. Thanks, JT.
Nice catching up with David Lombardi, who has a great career going for him at The Athletic. And we wrap it up with a longtime friend and a guy that I've been talking to for over two decades. He is the voice of the 49ers. We welcome Ted Robinson to the Raiders Game Plan Podcast. And Ted, let's begin with the last game for the 49ers in the loss. Why was Arizona so good in the fourth quarter of that game?
Yeah, that's the magic question, JT. And, unfortunately, the 49ers have had a couple of games like that this year, and even there was a different cast of characters, but they had a few of these last year where they just don't yet, they don't yet have the ability to finish a game, to close a game. They should have, won the game at Lambeau Field on Monday night against Green Bay. They couldn't close it. And this one was, even though you're not playing a very good team, and it's a quarterback who's talented but is still so young, they had a 12-point lead in the fourth quarter on their field. And it was the inability, obviously, to run the ball enough in the fourth quarter when you know they're going to run. And then the defense, my God, you let Rosen stand back there in the fourth quarter, have all kinds of time. Other than Fitzgerald, it's not a great receiving core, and they moved the ball down the field two times on you in the fourth quarter. That's why it's such a hard game, I think, for everybody on the 49ers side to accept.
Tell me about the development of C.J. Beathard as he took over for Garoppolo, what you've liked looking down from the booth.
Well, the obvious thing that everybody talks about him is tough, and I think that gets overplayed a little bit. When he's right and the offense is in rhythm, he's really good. He's a very accurate thrower for the most part. He will stand in and look. He doesn't duck too fast in the pocket. He'll hang in there, and unfortunately, he winds up taking hits, but he'll find receivers if it's second or third. He doesn't have. I think especially yesterday there was a deep shot in the fourth quarter tried at Goodwin that was probably just a little bit late, a little bit underthrown. The deep shot is not a big part of his weaponry, and the 49ers have gone to a lot of quick passing with him. I think there are two clear points that have come up. One is the ball security issue that everybody's talked about that he has to be right with. And secondly, now, as it did last year, JT, when teams have blitzed a lot, and he knows pressure's coming. The only thing you start worrying about is he anticipating pressure, you know what I'm saying, before it's actually there. And that's a consequence of the 49ers haven't been the greatest pass protection team this year. They've been a pretty good run block team, but pass protection has struggled, and teams have really blitzed the 49ers, especially since Beathard took over.
Ted Robinson, the voice of the 49ers, joins us as we game plan for the Thursday night game against the Raiders. I know from covering the Niners in depth like you do, but you're familiar with the Raiders, that both John Gruden and Kyle Shanahan are saying the same thing, that they need better players. Kyle Shanahan said it at his conference call that they need closers to put this game away. Where do you believe the Niners are in their overall vision this year, obviously with Jimmy being out, coming back next year, what they need to do in the draft and in free agency to take the next step?
Yeah, JT, that's really the best, I think, way to, for the 49ers to look at the second half of the season now at 1-7. It is about making sure, and this is just me, and I don't know that people inside even agree with this, but to me it's about making sure you get 4, 5, 6 guys that emerge and really are ready to be players. Someone, Garoppolo and Jerick McKinnon are back next year, that you think you've got a team that's ready to go. And right now, I would tell you there's one player who's emerged, and that's George Kittle, the tight end. He's the real deal, and he's going to be, or he has every chance to be, a very good player in the NFL for a long time. I think the second guy that will emerge by the end of the year is Mike McGlinchey, the number one draft pick at right tackle. He's been an outstanding run blocker. The problem is that I'm not mentioning defensive guys, and I think that's where it's short. Just the defensive guys. DeForest Buckner's really good. He's been, unfortunately, about the only guy in the D-line that's been able to put any pressure on. Reuben Foster has not played as well this year as he did as a rookie. Adrian Colbert, the free safety, did not play as well to start this year. He's now done for the year. Akello Witherspoon has not progressed. And these are, this is what I'm talking about. These are second and third-year guys that need to be better. And that's where the 49ers have to find what you're talking about and what Kyle referenced, JT, which are those guys that change a game, the top 6 or 8 guys that change games. They make a play or two plays when things are going wrong that turn a game around. And the 49ers right now do not have that. And I'll tell you where it really showed up to me was when they played the Rams. The Rams, you look at their roster, it's not a terribly, to me, it's not a deep roster. But, boy, they have 6 or 8 studs. And they make the plays that change games. And Aaron Donald, we saw vividly last week, was the number one guy in that regard. And Todd Gurley's probably number 1A. And that's where the 49ers, like most teams in their position, those are the guys they're looking for.
Ted Robinson joins us as we wrap it up. The Raiders gave up 3 touchdowns to 3 different tight ends on Sunday. Andrew Luck really had a big game, especially late. The Raider defense was on the field the whole game. I know that the Niners are ranked 6th when it comes to rushing yards at over 133 yards a game. Do you expect a heavy dose of the run game because the Raiders struggled tackling?
Yeah, I think that's what Kyle Shanahan wants every week, JT. He really feels, and it obviously when you're running a lot of play-action stuff, as Shanahan's system does, you need a run threat. Otherwise, the play-action's useless. We know that. So they tried. They didn't run it well yesterday. That was a disappointment against a defense that isn't a great run defense in Arizona, and they didn't run well. The 49ers have also had rotating running backs. Matt Breida has been banged up in virtually every game. Raheem Mostert got banged up a little bit yesterday. Well, he's been a real nice speed guy to come up. And Alfred Morris is more of a reliable, you know, going to get you the ground and pound yards, not the big play runner. But they've done a good job running the ball most of the year. They did not do it as well yesterday, and that was a big part, because yesterday was by far the least effective offensive game of the year, and that was what was so stunning coming against that team. But every other game this year, JT, they've been able to pretty much establish a run.
Ted, on a personal note, I followed your entire career. We go back a long way. You grew up in Rockville Center. I'm from Massapequa, where I'm covering the Raiders. You're the voice of the Niners. I look at your esteemed career from tennis and baseball, the Olympic Games, which I know how important that is to your overall life and your reputation. Where are you as a broadcaster in your career with one of the best jobs as the voice of a franchise that has so much history with the 49ers?
JT, that's very kind of you to say. And I can tell you right now that one of my career highlights is that I can still sit there and name the Babylon Line on the Long Island Railroad. And I can still go Massapequa, Massapequa Park, Amityville, Copaig, Lindenhurst, and Babylon.
It's incredible. When I go back home and I stay at my parents with my kids and we get on at the Massapequa stop and we go all the way into Penn Station, I try to teach them that. But was the roots of you growing up as a New York sports fan, when you're doing a game at Levi's Stadium, a night game, it's a national game, how much do you reflect back on the voices that came before you, not only with the Niners, but who were some of your early mentors in your career?
Oh. Yeah, JT, absolutely. Come on, we're contemporaries, and so I grew up. As you said, I spent my entire life in New York until I left for college, and oddly, I've never lived in New York since. But I was influenced mostly by Marv Albert. Everybody in my time and my generation, if you liked sports, we used to all do Marv impressions. And Marv Albert, for those younger folks listening, was a radio guy when we were growing up. He didn't do television. It was all radio. And so we grew up listening to him do basketball and hockey on radio. And then the other big influences for me were Lindsey Nelson and Bob Murphy, because I grew up a diehard Mets fan. And so I really learned baseball from them. But it was the New York way, JT, which was pretty straightforward. There wasn't a whole lot of personality involved. And so when I moved out, and especially getting to San Francisco, where Russ Hodges and Lon Simmons and Bill King and Hank Greenwald were the legends, and all of them had personalities on the air, that was a little bit of an adjustment for me, was to learn how to let yourself go a little bit. Without intruding, obviously, on the game. But, that was part of the San Francisco thing. And so the 49ers, to go back to your original question very quickly, have had very few radio voices in their franchise history. So to be one and now be in a 10th year, it's extraordinary. And the best part was experiencing the three straight NFC championship years, one of them a Super Bowl year, because the fan base was starved.
Yes.
And to see so many new fans, JT, new fans who only know the dynasty from watching NFL film stuff, right? They didn't live it. There was their first experience with playoff football. And so when the 49ers get back again, this will happen now, because it's been another 4-year dry spell. And by the way, it'll happen in Vegas for the Raiders. You know that. When they get good again, there'll be a whole generation of fans there that never saw it before. And it will be a thrill for you to see this new wave experience playoff football.
Ted, the game is Thursday night, the Battle of the Bay. It means everything for the fans. I wish the team's records were better coming into the game. Thanks for making this happen. Really appreciate having you on.
I'll see you Thursday.
So that'll do it for this week's game plan. I want to thank Tim Brown, David Lombardi, Matt Maiocco, and once again, the great Ted Robinson, the voice of the 49ers. Enjoy the Battle of the Bay. And thanks for listening to the Game Plan podcast for everyone at Silver and Black Productions. I'm JT.
Thank you for listening to the Game Plan on the official Raiders Podcast Network.